At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey everybody, it's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Today on The Grave Talks, the continuation of our conversation with Ronald Cavall inside the Overbrook Insane Asylum. Ronald is a man who almost wasn't. At a very young age, he nearly died of suffocation, was declared dead, but miraculously came back to life at a very intriguing time and had a very intriguing life. In his life's journey, he would work at the Overbrook Insane Asylum during operational years that he was there from 1988 to 1998. During his time there, he'd experienced countless shocking, haunting, and paranormal experiences that simply cannot be explained. Time warps, conversations with patients who've already passed, and much, much more. This is our second conversation with Ronald.
The one time walking through the wards, to go Ward 41. 41 was a ward where the patients were prepped to leave.
Mm-hmm.
That's their last threshold. They were getting ready to leave. And that day I had to do a patient who was going to be leaving. And I said, sure, I'll come over. So I went over there. And as I'm going through ward, I believe it was 23, which is a male ward.
Mm-hmm.
And a patient was on there who was just released about a month ago. And he didn't go to admissions because admissions was overcrowded. So they put him back to the ward he left from. So when I'm going through, he sees me, he goes, Ron, he goes, listen, when you come back, can you do me a favor? I said, what is it? He goes, can you tighten me up a little bit, you know, fix my hair a little bit? I said, sure, I got nothing to do. Don't worry about it. So I go to 41. I take care of the one patient. I make my way back. Now, this guy is on a one-to-one. One-to-one means you're not supposed to let him away from you within arm's length.
Mm-hmm.
If he goes to the bathroom, you go with him. You know?
Yeah.
He goes here, you go with him. Not allowed outside, not to do that. He's like in quarantine for at least 3 days,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And so what happens, I'm setting up, I went back there, I'm setting up in a corner because I'm going to trim his hair for him, you know. I had nothing else to do, and I do favors for people now and then. But the one thing, though, the two attendants that were there, both of you watch them, they come to me and say, we'll be right back, we're going to the snack bar to grab something. You know, they figured because I was attendant, I worked with them one time, that I should be able to handle this.
Sure.
You know, so what happens is that I love this phone, it goes off and I don't want to. And so what happens is that, you know, they leave and I'm there with him, you know, and so everything's fine. And first thing I'm getting ready for, I said, okay, well, come on. He goes, hold on a minute, Ron, I have to go to the bathroom. I said, sure, go ahead. The bathroom door is like steel, a steel door with a glass in front. He walks in the bathroom. Next thing you know, that bathroom door slams. I mean, boom. I'm thinking, why the hell would he slam the door?
Yeah.
You know? He's going to Maya. What is he? You know, he slammed the door. And so I'm waiting and waiting and waiting. What's going on? And next thing I know, I hear a ruckus going on in there. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hearing, like, the partitions in the bathroom there or metal being kicked or something like that. Now, what's going through my mind is I'm thinking he's trying to break out.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Through the window, because there's all cages on the window.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm thinking. So I go up to the door, and I'm looking through. I can't see nobody, and then I'm trying to open the damn door. It won't open. You know,
yeah.
You can't turn the knob. It ain't opening. I go up to the nurse's station. She's not there. And the attendants aren't there. So I go. I said, well, let me go next door. I went to go next door. It's not opening. I said, what the hell is this crap? Then I go back to over where he is, and then I hear him screaming. He's screaming the top of his lungs, Ron, help me, help me, help me. You know,
yeah.
I'm trying to get the door open. I said, push the door open. He goes, help me, you know, and I could hear kicking and yelling. And I couldn't do anything. And next thing you know, the door starts to unlock. You heard the lock go, you know. And then as I pull the door open slowly, well, then I don't hear anything. And I'm going, this is not, something's not right here. And as I start walking through, it's a big bathroom. So it has like maybe 5 to 6 stalls or more. Mm-hmm. And at the end is a window, big giant window with a cage on it on the outside. And I seen it was closed, so I know he didn't get out. So as I'm walking over, I don't see him, I don't see him, I don't see him. And I'm looking down on the floor towards the toilets, and there, I don't see him. And I said, damn. And so I turned around, and I'm going slowly again. I'm looking down and then up. And as I got to the second to the last stall, I look up. And as I looked up, a shoe fell. And I looked up further, and from the pipes, he was there and hanging from the pipes. And but look on his face, it was too late. He already lost control of his bowels and everything else.
Yeah.
So I'm standing there as he's staring down, looking at me, and I'm looking at him, you know, and I'm like shaking. And my back is like, you know, it's like, I don't know what to do. So I just walk out the door and that. And the next thing I know, as I'm walking out the door, the two attendants come walking in with their little bags, what they got from the snack bar, you know.
Yeah.
They're sitting at the table, and I'm standing there and just nonchalantly, I'm putting all my stuff back away. You know?
Yeah.
And I put it away, close it up. I walk up to them, and they said to me, where is so-and-so? I said, well, he's in the bathroom. And as far as you know, I wasn't here. I ain't filling out no reports.
Yeah.
I wasn't supposed to be here. I'm not here. You never seen me.
Wow. When you were there, and obviously we're talking 88 to 98, still a time where, yeah, you know, it wasn't, you know, people didn't necessarily talk about this stuff super openly as they may do now, even though it's still, you know, kind of hush-hush. Were there other, did you have other coworkers that also experienced paranormal things, and were they as intense as what you experienced?
I never met anybody who said anything. A lot of people are more relaxed.
Wow.
You know what it was? I was the only one. Somebody used to say to me, you know, you're the hardest working person in this hospital. Because I would go, I mean, to every ward.
Yeah.
Every day. With every patient. You know, I did them all. Where these people just sat on a ward relaxing.
Yeah.
You know, and had what they call free time. And as soon as the patients got their breakfast in the morning, they went right to the meds. They lined them up. They got their medications. Mm-hmm. And then they were released on free time. You know.
Now that the building, because it has been torn down, correct?
Right.
Now that it's gone, you know, let me ask, what is there? Is it just an open plot of land, or did they develop it?
No, they developed. They put homes there, condos. Okay. I was told by a friend of mine who lives around the area.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been back to see that yet, but I will. But he told me, he said, oh, yeah. He goes, where you used to work at now, there's condos there and homes and everything. You know, the thing about this is that a long time ago, we had county executives who were all trying to get rid of the hospital. There was a prison on the other side. On the hilltop was a sanitarium.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That was kind of closed down because TB was now cured and there was no need for it. So that was a scary looking building sitting on top of a hill.
Yeah.
On the other side of that hill was a prison called Caldwell Prison. Now, on the hilltop, you had a view of the New York skyline.
Mm-hmm.
This property was worth a lot of money.
Sure.
They were trying their damnedest. Every one of them. Matter of fact, we lost quite a few county executives to prison.
No.
And to get rid of the hospital, to get rid of the prison, because nobody even wants to buy property on a hilltop if you have a hospital and prison and an asylum next to you.
Yeah.
So what they did, eventually they achieved that. After I left there, they moved the hospital all the way down to a little bitty plot. It used to be a training thing for the police.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a 200-bed unit. That's all. Very tiny.
Yeah.
And the prison was flattened. Sanitarium flattened. Everything else like that. That's all built up. All the homes I heard on top of the hilltop are going for close to $1 million an acre.
What do you think? Do you think that these homes are going to have activity in them? Do you think that there's that yes, the structure is gone?
Without a doubt in my mind. Yep. Without a doubt. Then without a doubt. There's things there that I wouldn't even toy with at all. But it is some scary stuff because later on, as things got more intense and happened, with the priest I knew,
mm-hmm.
we used to talk. I went to talk with him, and he said to me, he says, "Ron, I want to help you, but," he says, "I can't go to the other priest in here and stuff because they're going to say no. I can't go to the bishop. He's going to say no, you know?" And he's going to say that, "Oh, well, these patients are not in the right state of mind, so it's not that." But I told him, I said, "Father, it's not the patients, you know?"
Yeah.
And so he said it'd be the best thing for us to do so we can continue to talk about this is in the confessional.
Yeah.
So we go in there because everything we talk about there is private.
Sure.
And it's not to be indulged to another priest or anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "That's a great idea." So that's what we used to do. We used to meet every now and then. And at times I would even take off from work on my lunch and go right down here and go talk with him in the confessional. And, you know, and kind of tell him what's going on and the different things there. And at times he used to make up little things for little kids for me. And then he'd go here and goes, he gave me a few bottles of holy water. I said, "Father, when I posted this, you know," and he said, "I can't run around the hospital throwing holy water."
Yeah.
And, you know. I was with him, and he said, no, Ron. He goes, "You sense something going on, drink from it."
Oh, wow.
"Drink from it. It'll go through your blood and your veins and your pores." Mm-hmm. "Drink from it and see what happens." It kind of helped somewhat. On some things, it kind of helped, but other things, it didn't. Other things got really out of hand and that, but...
What was the father's reaction when you would tell him some of these stories like you've been telling me?
Well, that's what I'm going to do. When I do the other podcast I was going to do, I was holding back on that. I was wanting to see if people were even going to care or listen, you know,
mm-hmm.
all different things going on. But they seem to be listening quite a bit. It's doing pretty well, so... the one thing I was going to talk about is another thing that happened there is where it happened to one time when they had one patient there in two wards, ward 61 and 62. They had elderly patients. This is when I first started working as a barber.
Mm-hmm.
With another gentleman, he only stayed there a short time. He had to leave due to a heart condition. We went over to 61 and 62, and he said to me, "Ron, you take 61, I'll go to 62. Take care of them. If you need any help, come get me."
Yeah.
I said, "No problem." Walked into there. It was a bunch of elderly men. They had to be in their 80s, whatever, something like that. It looked like Woodstock. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody had hair down to their shoulders, beards, you know.
Yeah.
And walking circles. And I went to the nurse's station. I said, "What in God's name is going on here?" And she said, "Well, this is all they do." I said, "You're kidding me." Again, I says, "Apparently, I don't think they have anybody visiting, do they?" She said, "No." I says, "Well, why don't we clean them up?" She said, "Are you serious?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "We'll take the hair off.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to cut it down to, like, not military, but close enough to it." And that. Because the hair was, like, real streaky looking and oily looking and that. And the yeah. beards were all shaggy and nobody was really taking care of anything. And she said, "Well, if you can do it, we'll be really happy." I said, "Okay." So talk to the attendants. I said, "We're going to set up a reduction line. I'm going to get the chair, get a garbage can over here for the hair, and bring them over one by one, and we'll take care of them. We're going to remove the hair first, and then we're going to work on the beards, you know."
Mm-hmm.
And they said, "Okay." So all I did was hold her head up. Some of them had to be actually held up because like I said, I found out later on, these patients here were only kept there and they were not put down to a geriatric center, which they did have, because these were lobotomies and that went bad.
Oh, wow.
That's why they were there. And I wonder why nobody said nothing to me.
Sure.
You know, patients used to say something. But what I did is I would just put the hair down, take the clipper, go with like a number two guard or whatever, and go, that's it. You know, all came off. It was nice and even. Trim them up bottom. It was fast. It was smooth. They looked good. We got them. I said, let's just do this first. And when I got done, it was like close to lunchtime, and the pail that I had on the side was full of hair. You know?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'm going to come back with some other, another clipper, a couple of the clippers that I have after lunch, and we're going to remove the beard, you know?
Yeah.
And if we can shave them, we're going to use not shaving cream, but the lanolin that they give you in your hand lotion thing, because it'll soften the beard a lot faster. And so when I came back, when I was having lunch and I was with the other barber, he said to me, how's it going? I said, it's going smooth. I'm not having any problems. He said, good. So when we went back, I went back in there, got the clippers out and checked on them. And it was kind of hideous because they had beard food stuck in there for I don't know how long.
Sure.
So I'm cutting all these things down as low as I can because I don't want to grab any skin, you know, low as I can. Then with a little tight one and then remove like 90% of it. And we move like clockwork. These guys are great. They're really nice. They help. And when we were done with them, then they were wetting their faces at the same time as I was getting done with them. And then putting the lanolin on them, not soaking them, but just a little bit. It's enough. And everyone had an individual razor, which they had these disposable ones with one little blade in it. And as they wore them to me, I would then shave them, you know?
Sure.
And that's it. Wipe off the face with a towel, and in the garbage it went, and the razor went to another bag. We got done. It looked like a whole different thing. It looked like a boot camp.
Yeah.
But good. They look good. The nurse was thrilled to death. She said, I don't believe this. I said, how long have they been like this? And she said, for years. I said, dear God, you know. So when we left, I went across. I was done. I still had some time left. They cleaned up for me. I went to the other ward, 62, and I got the other gentleman. As I walked in, he was still trimming hair. He was taking his cape and shaking it up, put a little piece of paper around her neck and tighten it down and pulling her hair down, just trimming off a quarter of an inch. I said, oh, my God. It looked like there was no change. I said, oh, he's had to go. I said, it's fine. He goes, you need help? I said, no, I'm done. So as we're leaving, he says to me, well, I better go on to the ward and check because I don't need him calling the supervisor and complaining, you know. I said, okay. I didn't want him in there. And I said, okay. So he walked in there, and he walked out, didn't say nothing. His jaw hit the ground until we got back into the office over there on the ward 13. And he said to me, what are you trying to do, take my job? I said, nope. He goes, that would usually take 6 months to do that. I said, well, I couldn't see them being that way. You know, I'm not trying to be mean. I said, listen, I said, I know you have a heart condition, I was told. I said, let me take the bulk of the weight on my shoulders. You know, we'll clean them up and then we'll have it like clockwork. It'd be like a science. Boom. We have no problem. You know, let me take over the load. And we're fine. We'll work together.
Sure.
We shook hands on it. And I said, great, because he's a really nice guy, real religious, really nice. And the next morning, of course, the supervisor calls up, and he went to a different ward, and I had to go back to the ward he was on. And I went there, repeated the same thing. We did that. That's when I asked the nurse when I was done. I said to her, how come these patients, when I ask him anything, well, do you want a mustache? Do you want this? Out of a courtesy? Nothing. Not boo, not nothing at all, you know. I said, I'm not looking for thank yous or anything, but, you know. And then she called one of the patients over. The attendants brought him over, sat him back and held up and lifted up his eyelid underneath there and showed me. You can see a very slight dentation on both of them as she showed me. And I said, what's that from? She said, lobotomies.
Oh, my God.
They went too far.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. And some with shock treatment went too far.
So these were all people that were damaged by what was supposed to help them.
Yeah. So this is what they kind of hit them out and stuff like that. To eventually they passed on, and then that was it. You know. And so I felt that's what I'm saying. I felt bad for people. Something like that. You know. Mm-hmm. Did this stuff for a long time. I'm there to help them, not make them feel bad about themselves, but take care of these people. What I can do.
Yeah.
But. You know, like in the next podcast I'm going to do is about a situation that occurred with a lot of the adolescents there.
What occurred
that
there?
Happened. Well, they had on Ward 61 and 62, they were adolescent wards there and stuff. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of abuse. And... like I said, I don't want to talk too much about it now, but it was a lot. I'm still putting the thing together. I'm looking at paperwork and stuff like that to verify it and stuff. I give you an example of what kind of went on there at times with patients, okay? There was, when I first started there, I wasn't even there, my God, a few weeks, and on the ward, and this one attendant that was there walked out of a side door and went off the ward. And about, I'd say about 30 minutes later on, or something like that, the head nurse came in and asked me, she said, "You know, did you see where so-and-so went to?" I said, "Yeah, not no." And I said, "Yeah, he went out that door." "Why?" She said, "Okay, because they're waiting for him to come back." And the same thing there. He said, what they were doing is that on the female patients at times, they were going there and they were having sex with them.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So it's a lot of stuff that goes on that they don't want you to know. Like I said, sure. The place is shut down. It's gone. This is stuff they did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is the stuff that went on there and that, you know.
This is an interesting question, and it's just a matter of opinion. But when you look back on your time there and your interactions with the patients and all the negativity, all the suffering that they had gone through, do you think that some of the people who were, you know, labeled quote unquote insane were really plagued by some of these spirits, plagued by some of this energy that goes beyond just their own mental health and their own mental issues that they may be suffering from? Do you think some of these people were, you know, almost said detachment, said something else going on with them that was just constantly written off as, well, it's whatever diagnosis they would give them at that point in time?
Well, yeah, the one time I seen, hold on, I'm going to read something here. One time I was there, and what you can see is like a, they call a shadow thing or something.
Shadow people?
And yeah, with that. And what happened with these patients is that with these shadow people, whatever like that, you would see a patient who was, for example, we walked through, me and one of the guys from housekeeping, we're both going in the same direction one day through the ward. Mm-hmm. And as we're walking through the ward there, the one patient, just out of nowhere, he went off, you know. Mm-hmm. And he started throwing things, chairs and stuff like that. So he had to be subdued, and there wasn't enough attendants on there to subdue him. So me and the one guy from housekeeping, we assisted. I was taught how to do it. So basically what you do is that if you get four people, each one grabs a limb, mm-hmm. you know, and you go separate directions with the limb. You're not going to hurt somebody. You just, they don't have control.
Sure.
And so we got him in there and stuff like that. And one thing I noticed that when he got him there, they gave him Demerol, you know, they mm-hmm. shoot him up with Demerol.
Yeah.
And I noticed that when they shot him up, and he's lying there in seclusion room, that the next thing I noticed is that you could see, again, another kind of haze leave him. And then I noticed when different things happen like that, this was happening. We had on the mission ward, when I went down there to cut hair one time, went down to mission ward. Never had problems down there at all. Went down there, did all the patients I did down there. No problem. Headed my way back out. They had the day room in the back where they had doors to get through to it. And there was a guy from housekeeping. He had his door open where he keeps his equipment. And we're standing there talking. And just then, as I look up the corridor, they have a doorbell, actually. They rang the doorbell. Here's the police coming in with this guy. He's now in shackles. Mm-hmm. They bring him in shackles, into the nurse's station. And what happens is the nurse goes, and they have him unshackled. Now, normally they would take him and keep him away from everybody. They have to inspect him. Sometimes they would even subdue him a little bit by sedating him. Mm-hmm. And that. But he's, I don't know why they did this, but they, from there, two of their attendants walked him back into the day room in the back. And the day room consisted of, it was a pretty big room. It had a TV up there, chairs and that, a couple of tables for them that they would play cards on and stuff. Mm-hmm. Out of nowhere, this is what I called at that part till I seen him. I heard the noise. Out of nowhere, they said he flipped the table over, grabbed a hold of one of the legs on this table, which is quite heavy and quite large, ripped it from the table like it was nothing, flung it at the TV, still in his hands, like a baseball bat, smashed the TV, and then went after the other patients. And now they're all running out of the room.
Yeah.
And he's busting every window on that day room.
With like superhuman strength.
And next thing I know, he's making his way out. I took my little stuff I had, card I had, I shoved it into the guy's maintenance thing. I said, close the door, let's get the hell out. Now he's heading up toward us. And the door, he's crashing that. So we're making a beeline the hell out of there. You know, anybody else we can grab. And told the nurse and stuff. The nurse gets up, she takes off and everything. You know, they're calling for help. And he can't get out of the doors. But he, the God's honest truth, he smashed every damn window in there. He destroyed the nurse's office, busted everything up in the medication room, everything. He went berserk. Everything was going on. And the thing about it is that they had to call the same police that brought him there. They came there and locked in there. They had to go through the back way into there and have him drop to his knees. Mm-hmm. And then chained him back up and took him out. Now, they had him there. They brought a gurney down. And they had him laying on his stomach on the gurney. And as he's wheeling out, he turns and looks right in my face and grins. Like a very evil, sadistic grin at me.
Yeah.
And I'm going, son of a bitch. You know?
Yeah.
And he wasn't like that when he came in there. He was calm. He wasn't like that. He didn't seem that type of person. But, man, I mean, I never seen that. Even the head of the hospital came down, the director.
Mm-hmm.
I was walking away, and he said, Ron, what happened? You were there. So I gave him the tour. And we went into the room there. It was me and a few other attendants and him. And we went into the day room where the table, the chair, the arm of the leg of the chair or table was broken off, rather, and went there, and three of us stood on that table and tried to break a leg off. Couldn't do it. For the life of us, couldn't do it. And the attendant that was there said he took that over, took that table, took that leg off that table like it was nothing.
What do you
think?
How do they, I mean, how do people, how does the medical community, once we're not looking at this from like a paranormal, you know, stance, how does one explain something like that happening?
Their basic medication, the only thing they really did there is that basically what they did is they kept them sedated.
Yeah.
That was their whole, they sedate them to the point where, oh my God, with lithium and everything else like that. I mean, I've seen patients on Ward 57 when I was up there at times. When I was attendant, I worked there a few times, mm-hmm. you know. And it's horrible to see the end result of these people.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, one patient that I went up there, I did on the thing about a patient named Sam. This is true, and it was sad because I knew the guy for quite a long time. You know, it was very nice, no problem. But when I got the call to go up to 57, because I would help try and cut Sam's hair because he had stomach cancer, which is now spread.
Yeah.
His time was short. and his family was coming up that night to visit with him. And I said, okay, so I went up there and I put my cart in the nurse's station. I get my equipment in there and I went in and I pulled up a chair and I sat down and I was talking to him. First thing he said to me was, oh, I don't want my hair cut or anything. Now he looks sloppy. He was never that way. He had a beard and he looked like hell. And so I sat down and talked to him for a while, you know. And, you know, got him to relax and everything. And we were sitting there talking and that. And after about a good half hour or so, I said to him, I said, you know, I heard your family's coming up.
Yeah.
And I said, it's really nice of them. And I said, you know, do you really want them to see you looking this way? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, you know, well, he said, well, how bad am I? I says, well, don't go nowhere. I'm going to get my mirror. I'm going to give you a shot, you know, see what you look like. So I just took the mirror out of my thing. And I went over to him. I said, kid around with your patients a lot. So I show him the mirror. And he looks at it. He goes, oh, my God. I said, you think that is bad? And he said, yeah. He said, you want to see the back? He said, sure. So I used to turn the mirror to the back.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, so you get a laugh. They kid around, you know, it breaks the ice.
Yeah.
And so if you want to, why don't you give me the chance? Let me clean you up a little bit. He says, for their sake. You know?
Yeah.
This is for me. And he said, okay, Ron, I'll do it. I said, good. So I bought the cart in there that I helped them out of bed into the chair, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that. And we used like a little spray bottle, you know, with water. We used there. I warmed it up a little bit. I don't want to hit nobody with cold water and cleaned his hair up. And I cut his hair for him and that. And I removed the beard, shaved him and that. And he looked good. He goes, thank you very much, Ron. Appreciate it and stuff. And he went to help him back into bed. He lied down and stuff. And he said something about, he says, you know, I keep on seeing these dark shadows moving around in my room. I said, but don't be afraid of them, Sam. I said, I seen them too. Don't let them scare you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to leave you now. He said, I'm going to stop by. I have to go to the Mission Ward across the hall tomorrow. And I'm going to stop in and talk to you. Okay. See how you're doing. You know, if you need anything, you let me know.
Yeah.
I'll get it for you. So next morning I went in, went next door to Mission Ward. Walked to the nurse's station because they're eating. I left my cart in there. I said, I'm going next door. I got to see a patient. She said, sure. Went in there. Now, Sam's room, as soon as you opened the door in 57, was right on the left-hand side. It's the end room. So I walked in, looked in the door, and there's Sam lying there and stuff. And again, I pulled the chair up. I said, Sam, how did it go? He said, really well. Everything went really nice. He said, that's good. I said, I'm happy. How was your family? He said, oh, they're doing well and everything. I said, good. And he said, oh, yeah, by the way, Ron, thank you very much. He said, my wife left an envelope with the nurse for you. You know, I said, they didn't have to do that. He said, don't worry. He said, please take it. I said, okay, whatever. You know. So I went into the nurse's station. In there, and I talked to the nurse. She said, oh, Ron, how you doing? I said, fine. I said, I stopped in. There's an envelope here for me. She said, how did you know? I didn't call you yet. She said, I was just talking to Sam in the room there, and he told me his wife was going to drop one off. So as she was opening the drawer, the long drawer in there, she was pulling out the envelope. When I said that, I was talking to Sam in the room there. She stopped. And just stared at me.
Oh, God.
For about a good 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And when she handed me the envelope, her hand was like shaking a little bit, you know. And she said, you were talking with Sam. I said, yeah. You know, what's so big about that, you know. She said, okay. She said, well, come on with me. I'll walk you out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay. So as we got up to the room, she said, this is the room you're talking to Sam in? I said, yeah. And she turned around. She said, here, take a look. Turned around. The bed was totally stripped down, was cleaned, sterilized. And she said, Sam passed away last night.
Oh, gosh.
The body's there. And so she looked at me, and then I get kind of emotional and walk away, you know.
Yeah.
And it screws up your head. But, you know, I went next door, you know, composed myself and just kind of bury myself into my work. And what I had to do there, you know, and concentrate on that. But it's just things like that that get to you, you know.
That wraps up the second conversation with Ronald. To hear part two of our second conversation, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our show. We're going to talk about Ronald and some of the people that were in the asylum that were deemed insane. Does Ronald believe that maybe they weren't so insane, but more so plagued by the spirits? What horrible depravity took place with the adolescent patients at the Overbrook Asylum? And also, did Ronald ever encounter what he would describe as evil in the Overbrook? Those questions and more. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.